On today's College Football Inquirer, 5 to play 5, we talk about the rule change. What does it actually mean from a football standpoint? Why are all these college football coaches smiling today? Because they know that a quarterback will never come to them with 3 games to go and say, I need to sit out the rest of the season so I can preserve my red shirt. Also, North Dakota State will be allowed to compete for a bowl game, for the Mountain West Championship, for the national championship? Who knows? The Bison can do anything thanks to another recent decision, plus the transfer portal window shrinking. Maybe. We'll talk about it all on today's College Football Inquirer. This is College Football Inquirer with Stephen Godfrey. I am Andy Staples. Stephen Godfrey, if you're watching on the YouTube, which you should every once in a while, just to see how beautiful his coiffure is, wearing a glorious Alice in Chains shirt.
Got it on vacation. Are we doing local shout-outs? I didn't know we were going to do this.
Absolutely.
Easy Street Records in West Seattle. All of you UW fans know exactly what I'm talking about. They got the Mother Love Bone mural you can take a picture of next to, and then the Chris Cornell Memorial mural. Andy, real fast, I live in Nashville, Tennessee. I could get up from this microphone right now and walk to something called the Taylor Swift Bench. I get stuck in traffic a lot in Nashville behind double-decker tour buses. Yeah. This is the bane of my existence. I went to Seattle, and I did all that stuff that drives me nuts in Nashville in Seattle because I am of a certain age. Yes. So
that's right.
Yes. Long live Seattle. Yes, absolutely. Very happy.
Well, into the flood again. It is the same old trip it was back then, by the way. We're talking about rule changing, but
this time we can talk about
a rule change that we can translate to the field. We can actually talk about football here, and I appreciate that. So the Division I cabinet, I always hate using their little organizational words, but the Division I cabinet passed the 5-to-play-5 rule. The arguments you're hearing about it most places are, oh my God, this is going to be so many lawsuits. The basketball people are going crazy about it because of the age limitation. The age thing's not going to affect football very much. It just isn't. That's not how the sport works. Aussie punters probably need to decide sooner if they want to come over. But it really will affect the game on the field a lot. And so I had Dave Doran, the NC State coach, on my On3 show yesterday, and we were talking to him about how this changes everything for you. And I mentioned his current quarterback, CJ Bailey, who they did not intend to play as a true freshman but had to, because Grayson McCall's career was ended by concussions. CJ Bailey now gets an extra year that he wouldn't have gotten. I don't know that he's going to need it. He's probably going to go to the NFL. But Dave Doran also reminded us of the MJ Morris situation in 2023 at NC State, which was insane.
Yes.
Insane. Now, for those who don't remember, this is a nice little soap opera. So MJ Morris, as a true freshman in 2022, had to play 5 games. He had to come in because Devin Leary got hurt. He tore his pectoral muscle. And the idea was that MJ Morris was going to play in 4 games. He's going to be redshirted. But he had to come in and start. He ends up getting hurt while he's the starter. Only plays 5 games, but plays 5 games. So he does not get the redshirt that year.
Okay.
The next year, the thought is he's going to be the starter. But then they hire Robert Anai as the offensive coordinator. And Robert Anai, who had coached Brennan Armstrong at Virginia, is like, I'm going to bring in Brennan Armstrong.
Yep.
So MJ now goes, okay, if you're going to recruit over me, then we're going to redshirt me this year. And that's all fine and good until Brennan Armstrong is not playing well. And they're like, hey, MJ, that guy we recruited over you might not actually be better. So can you start? MJ Morris starts 4 games. They go 3-1 in those 4 games. And with 3 games to go in the regular season, he's like, remember we said where I was going to redshirt?
Right.
I'm going to redshirt.
The theme of today's show, at least today's first segment, Andy, is going to be an appeal to reason. What I think I like about this, and I'm going to be careful because I'm complimenting the NCAA, is that we have a reasonable standard of eligibility. Mm-hmm. To your point earlier, we're not going to have a lot of 36-year-olds deciding, hey, I'm going to be a freshman now, okay, for whatever weird reason, right?
And they can play D2 or D3 still.
Yes, yes. We have a very clear-cut, easy-to-understand rule that I think protects the athlete once they start their clock. Now, this has to come in concert with some protections. If we touch on transfers, this is mm-hmm. where this gets a little tricky, right? We're not penalizing anybody. We're not costing them time to leave a program they don't want to. But I think I like this is where I'm headed.
Yeah.
I've read the news the last couple of days. I've just listened to your anecdote there. And I think this is okay for everybody involved because it installs a level of simplicity that this process has been missing.
And it takes away an unintended consequence because the four-game redshirt rule passed in 2018, well-intentioned, by the way. It was, mm-hmm. let's clear up the redshirt situation because it used to be like, if you got, you could play in the team's first three games and then you couldn't play after that.
Right.
Or if you got hurt like before the 50% mark, it was a very nebulous standard. Mm-hmm. And so they changed it to something that made sense. But when the transfer portal and NIL came into effect, it essentially gave the agents a leverage point where they could hold the coaches hostage at between the game four and game five mark. And some of the stories of people coming up with like the most dubious maladies mm-hmm. as to why they can't play
before game flu.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So that's gone. That's not an issue anymore. It's they cut the BS out of it. Basically, you want to play a freshman, play a freshman. Okay. Mm-hmm. He's got 5 years.
Yes.
And you don't have to, there's no politics to it. And the waiver process, which again has caused so much of this consternation. Like the reason Trinidad Chambliss beat the NCAA in court is because the NCAA has been very arbitrary in how it hands out these waivers for extra years.
Yes.
Now, the three criteria are very clear: mission work, military service, maternity leave.
Okay.
I'm betting we get paternity leave in there somewhere.
So if I'm playing throughout a regular football player, it's my sophomore year. I played as a freshman. I'm now starting as a sophomore. I blow my knee out. What happens?
You keep playing when you recover, and you have three more years of eligibility.
Okay. So this is the conjecture I'm seeing online is, does this still, like, a lot of people are still asking questions that are I don't want to say like noble about injuries, because that would imply the Chambliss situation was manipulating eligibility. And who would do that, Andy?
Who would?
No one would do that. But yeah. And again, I don't like to call it legitimate injury, but something that happens on the football field, right? Yeah,
there's a little bit of stuff happens here. Like,
yeah,
some people are going to be unlucky.
Yeah.
And I hate that for them. But yes. Some people are going to be unlucky.
So to clear this up, we have we have someone who plays within the window, but inside that window is a year in which, they only saw the field for two games, three games because of injury. The now base standard is you have this window of time. That's it. It does not matter, right? We are not going to go back and appeal because we only got two games my sophomore year because I had an MCL thing, right?
Right, because all that does is end up in court.
Right.
If you try to do that.
Okay. I think I'm okay with this.
I think so too. And it's interesting talking to coaches about it. Special teams coaches around America are doing backflips today because this is something we probably don't consider.
No, we don't.
At all.
It's a good point.
But if you are the person who puts together the punt team and the punt coverage team, the kickoff team, the kickoff coverage team weekly, mm-hmm. you are just doing math these past few years on how many games these guys have played. Wait, can I use this guy today? Has he played four games? This guy's hurt, but we have this freshman. He's played in three games. I can use him this one, but I can't use him next game. That's over now. If they're healthy, you can play them. And it makes it so much easier. And you don't have... Because the other thing is, the MJ Morris situation was very public. There were plenty of situations that were not public.
Right.
Where an agent went in or a player went
in. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And said, hey, I've played four games. This year of eligibility for me is currency.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do for me?
Yes.
To get me to play game five?
Yes. I kind of have ended up being like voice of the players' rights on this show, but I also want to acknowledge that I talk to a lot of coaches. I talk to a lot of assistant coaches and coaches at schools that aren't necessarily in the SEC or the Big Ten. This is a problem that exists at the very top of college football. It also exists at the FCS level. It exists mm-hmm. at pretty much anywhere where this rule applies. And I've had a lot of assistants say, hey, look, here's what you don't understand. We're all for the players having some rights. What I am not okay with is a kid's balling out for me in September, and all of a sudden my head coach is getting a call from his agent saying, hey, we want to rework this deal, comma, or else. We got to get rid of that part.
And it's probably tougher. That was probably tougher in the group of six and in the lower reaches of the power conferences, because when you ball out in September at one of those schools, especially like group of six, where you play, who do you play in the non-conference? Like, let's say you went and put up good film against a power conference team, mm-hmm. which every power conference team that plays that team is going to watch your film now. I mean, this is the story of Jared Verse.
Albany to Florida State.
Albany plays Syracuse the year he pops at Albany. And now he didn't do this. He played out his whole season.
He did, yes.
But Albany plays Syracuse. Every school that played Syracuse that year recruited Jared Verse.
Because
they're like, holy crap, who is that?
To walk that out is that you're the first thing you're going to do is you're going to get cut-ups of your opponent and what they've done week to week. And then you're going to be sitting there. Because I've embedded with teams so often, it's so funny to watch this happen when you're focused on a task, right? What are their tendencies on third down on the defensive line, whatever, right? And you're sitting there as an offensive line coach and you're just watching this guy and you're like, is that Albany? Who the hell is that playing for Albany that just did that? Then you run down the hall to your recruiting coordinator or some other coach or your defensive coaches and you're like, yo, you guys got to see this. Somebody needs to make a phone call and, you know, not tamper and see what this kid's doing.
Back in the sit out 1 year days when you couldn't do that.
Oh man, yeah.
That was Khalil Mack. He played against Tennessee his sophomore year. And everybody's like, who is that?
Buffalo legend. Yeah. Everyone who listens to this who cheers for a Mack team is just crying right now because they used to be able to actually maintain, develop, promote, and keep talent. So yeah. I think I like this. I think we're okay. I think we can move on. Yeah, I mean,
I mean, there will be lawsuits from the people who played 4 years in four and just finished and are not going to the NFL or the NBA. I get it. You're probably gonna have to pay them some money. I don't know what else to tell you. Like, but they understood that they weighed the consequences of this because they were not gonna do it. And then they're like, you know what? I think maybe the Trinidad Shambliss thing pushed it over the goal line. For them.
Yeah, I think it was fatigue overall, though, of the trial exhaustion, and I mean it was also the absurdity of some of these other cases. Not that Trinidad didn't have some absurdity in it, but you had Joey Aguilar. It's fine, we don't even talk about that one anymore.
Trinidad's was far more legit and like documented and some of them were like, I just want another year. I have no documentation, but she gave this other guy another year. Give me another year.
Yeah. Which, again, if we have this is how I'm looking at it. If you have a clearly stated window in which you can make money, that's what I see this as. Because the overwhelming, hey, guess what, Andy? I've been told the majority of these kids are not going to go pro in sports, right? There's an organizing body that told me that.
I don't know how to break this to them. They're already pros in sports.
So that being said, whatever you are for this liminal state of 5 years, as long as we have a clearly agreed upon time in which you can make money at this level, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. So maybe today's theme is the alteration of rules that didn't make a lot of sense or caused more complications than they needed to.
An appeal to reason. We're just
something simpler.
We're just going to
appeal to reason. Is this going to be Andy and Godfrey praise the NCAA day? Maybe.
If so, we're deleting this show in 24 hours.
Look at that. Ross isn't here. Ross is traveling. Mm. And we're finally nice.
To the NCAA, to all the people that he has to take the phone calls from. That's my favorite
part.
For those of you who want to peek behind the scene, my favorite part of this show is I get to say whatever I want about the people that Ross has to then make a phone call to, usually sometimes 5 minutes after we record. And then I don't catch any of that feedback. It's great. So we get to say, Andy and I can say whatever we want.
And the NCAA people are so used to me bashing them.
Over
a 20-year period. Like, we actually just joke about it now. So it's not.
Yes. I really legitimately have a great relationship now, Andy, with three former enforcement individuals. I won't say what their positions were or anything. After they left, we kind of have like a clearing of the air. It's like a debrief after a war. And then I have a great relationship. And I ask them advice. I ask them their insight, their expertise on things. So I don't know if I'm going to go so far as every segment's going to praise the NCAA. But look, we are fans of reason and simplicity helping both sides of the equation to make good college football. And I could probably workshop that and make it simpler. And this does that.
Yeah, this will make better college football. And so will the thing we're going to talk about next. Because there's a certain team that's moving from the FCS to the FBS. And they kicked ass in the FCS. And we're like, hey, what if they just come in and kick ass immediately in the FBS? They're like, oh, there's a rule. Now there's not a rule anymore. We'll talk about it when we come back. We're back at the College Football Inquirer, and another bit of common sense coming down from the NCAA's Division I cabinet. They have voted to eliminate the bowl transition penalty, which is a weird way of saying you can't play in the postseason when you move up a level, which is also weird why they ever had the rule in the first place, because theoretically it should be harder when you move up a little. But that paves the way for the North Dakota State Bison.
Bison with a Z, folks. We're not going to make that mistake today. It's a Z, not an S.
That's right.
It's actually going
to They are moving to the Mountain West. They are moving to the FBS. After dominating the FCS for years, the Bison are moving to the FBS. And they were in danger of getting trapped by the same rule that trapped James Madison a few years ago. Yes. That is not going to happen to them. If the Bison win the Mountain West, they can play in the, or you know, are in the at the top of the Mountain West. They can play the Mountain West championship game. Mm-hmm. They can, if they win the league and are ranked high enough, they would make the college football playoff.
This is fantastic, by the way. First off, let me just say something. Back on our NCAA theme for the episode. Why do all of your rules sound like DOD mandates? Why does everything sound so serious? Maybe that's evidence that you guys are all taking this a little too seriously. Okay, so if you are unfamiliar, when you move up, when you have gathered enough shekels, enough rubles together, Mr. Staples, to say we are going to spend our way into the FBS, all right? You then are sort of penalized for it, and you have a transition year in which you can't compete right away. Now, there's a lot of logic for this, most of which I don't agree with. This is not as damning as you might think initially because people are adjusting their rosters to make the transition. I've looked up a few of our recent transition celebrities from FCS to FBS. Let's start with the Fighting Hens of Delaware, who are technically unofficially the College Football Inquirer's official G5 team. They, by the way, thanks for the gear, guys. I still have it. So they left the CAA. And then they played their first season in 2025 in Conference USA. They were 9-2 their last season in the CAA. The other thing that happens, Andy, and I don't know if this is clarified, can you still play in the FCS playoff bracket if you've already declared transition?
Ooh,
that's a good question. Know. Because famously, and I'll get to them in a second, the year that Georgia Southern beats Florida, they didn't even go to the playoff. They didn't go in. They didn't even play in the playoff. In the FCS, because they weren't allowed.
Those weren't that good that year.
That was actually one of their worst seasons. Jeff Munkin will tell you that. All right. So you had a 7-6 debut season, which, by the way, that's a huge success, I think, when you're transitioning up for Delaware last season. They were 9-2 the year before. So 7-6 is not something that would have penalized them. They did play in a bowl last year. I can't remember if they were granted an I believe they were granted an exemption, weren't they?
Yeah, I think because they didn't have a bowl eligible team, so they needed to fill in.
So they got in. Yes. I'm looking through here. So when Georgia Southern transitions, they are they're 9-4 their first bowl eligible year, but their first actual year, this is where it would have hurt. Okay. They come in and they are 9-3 in a year that they cannot play in a bowl. All right. That's tough. They have a transition year out there. Last year, they were actually 7-4, which was one of their worst records. So imagine a 9-3 bowl. And if you're sitting here and you're like, who cares about a bowl? If you're 9-3 and you are a brand new FBS team, it matters a whole hell of a lot. You know, you're not going to get a huge paycheck from a lot of these like early December bowls, but it's much, much more a matter of marketing, of rewarding your season ticket holders, many of whom who have just like, and I can tell you this as a fact, at Georgia Southern, just stroked a check to help get you to this level. And then you treat the bowl like a sort of reward or, you know, like a kind of validation, if you will. Yeah. James Madison, the juggernaut that is James, the college football playoff participant, James Madison Dukes. All right. They are 8-3 their first year. They're ineligible. This is probably as close as we could get. And even then, I'm kind of stretching credulity to having the conversation we're about to have about North Dakota State. So I don't think 8-3 in 2022 would have put them in a 12-team playoff. If there was a 12-team playoff to hypothetically discuss, Andy, I'm sure it would have been one of the teams for the American. But let's now bring this forward with one North Dakota State.
Yes. So they are in the Mountain West now. It is a Mountain West watered down by teams leaving for the Pac-12. But it is still somewhat formidable. You've got UNLV, which is a trendy pick to be the group of six playoff participant. You've got New Mexico, helmed by one Jason Eck, who a lot of folks in Big Ten country are watching this year to see if their team might want to hire Jason Eck. And so it is entirely – you've got Northern Illinois, which when I think mountains and west, I think DeKalb, Illinois.
DeKalb, Illinois, yeah. Of course.
So it'll be very interesting to see. I think they're going to have to win every – they would have to be 12-0, I think, to make the playoff, because their non-conference is Jacksonville State, Fordham, and the Moving On Up Bowl against Sacramento State.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which they had to schedule was
– which is in the MAC, by the way, because when I think – when I think Mid-American Conference, I think Sacramento.
When you think ruddy, hard Midwestern, Rust Belt humans, you think just north of San Francisco. I can give you a situation in which this happens, but I'll do it very, very quickly. What you would need is the American itself is kind of undergoing a little bit of a transition within itself, because we're going to have a little bit of coaching brain drain this season in the American. There are some, I think, great, promising coaches in various positions there. They're either just starting out, like a Brian Hartline at South Florida, or they are, you know, I'm trying to think of a good situation. You know, I'll put it this way. Navy is picked to win. A lot of people are using Navy as the dark horse to win the league, which tells me that there isn't like an automatic dominant favorite. If the American beats itself up, which I think it could, you could clear the path for an undefeated team like you're talking about. You would need North Dakota State to just win out completely. They would have to be undefeated. Then you would probably also need Boise and the new Pac-12. Mm-hmm. Stay with me here, yep. America. And the new Pac-12 to take probably two losses, I think.
Probably, yes. Yeah, because we don't know who's going to be viewed as the stronger conference. I think the assumption is the Pac-12 will be viewed as the stronger of these two.
Bill Connolly I just recorded over at PhantomIsland.show. We did 2 hours on the group of six by request, because we have a very, very specific fan base. You know who you are. And right now, mathematically, Bill has the Pac-12 much, much closer to the American than they are to the Mountain West. Just for your information.
Very interesting. And your Boise State schedule, by the way, you said Boise State probably have to take two losses. The one loss they would take would be Oregon.
Yeah.
But one loss would mean they beat Memphis. And Memphis may be one of the front runners in the American. So
this is where you would need the American to start beating itself up as it goes through conference play, which is possible. Which is possible this season, because I don't see like an automatic, you know, there's been a lot of questions about UTSA in recent years. They've kind of leveled off. Obviously, North Texas replacing a coach, Tulane replacing a coach, like South Florida replacing a coach. It's not Charles Huff in Memphis, I think, might have kind of the inside track there. But if you have teams with one or more losses, 1-3 losses, and then you have an undefeated North Dakota State, it would at least be a conversation in November. That's as far as I would probably take this, though.
Yeah, but the fact of the matter is they're going to be a bowl team. Like, I don't think North Dakota State's going to go 5-6 or 5-7. Like, they're going to be a bowl team. And it was always stupid to not let those teams play in bowls.
It was always stupid, Andy, but that hasn't stopped the – like, a lot of NCAA rules spend decades on the books and are flagrantly stupid from their inception. I'm curious, do you think that this has happened now because of bowl inventory, like what happened with Delaware last year?
I think that has a lot to do with it. I think also these guys are starting to realize some of our stupid rules we could just make not stupid.
I mean, I would love to think, again, today's theme is an appeal to reason. I think I would love for it to be the latter. I do kind of think it's the former, in which you still have enough bowls.
Yeah, you got to fill the bowl games.
Who are above water and saying we need participants here.
Yeah. So elsewhere, in the group of six. Let's go to UTEP. Let's go to El Paso.
Let's go to. Have you ever been to the Sun Bowl?
I have not. It is a bucket list item.
It's fantastic, sir. It's fantastic. I've been for a UTEP home game, massive stadium, which is a reason why we're going to talk about it, actually.
So the Miners are going to let their fans pick kickoff times. They're going to let their fans vote for the kickoff time for their October 17th game against San Jose State. It's part of Innovation Day. Okay. So fans can go to a website and they can pick a 1 p.m., 2 p.m., 4 p.m., or 7 p.m. kickoff. I would love if there was a live view of who's voting for what here.
Like a Steve Kornacki interactive map type situation? Is that what we're
exactly
saying?
Yeah. Okay, I need to know.
All right.
I need to know.
Get on it, Kornacki.
I'll ask you this, Godfrey, because somebody asked me this for the other show in the mailbag. Mm-hmm. What's the ideal kickoff time for a college football game?
Come on now. That's very loaded. So the ideal kickoff time for Red River is the 11 a.m. Central as part of the state fair.
Except that's not where they put it now.
I know. I think most Michigan and Ohio State people are in agreement that the ideal kickoff for the game is noon Eastern, right?
That's just so nobody gets caught in a snowstorm on the way home.
No, I'm fine. I'm not even arguing these things.
I know. But the answers are regional. Like every LSU fan will tell you ideal kickoff time is 7:30 p.m. Central time.
Yes. So the game that was the most important when I got into this world was LSU Ole Miss because of my personal journey to college football. And both sides would agree, you know, that game does not need to kick before it should kick at 7 o'clock Central p.m. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
This varies dramatically. I understand, you know, I don't know if there's a hard and fast rule. And also, hey, let's not kid ourselves. We are college football TV consumers more than we are ever college football ticket holders. Okay. So we are kind of talking out of both sides of our mouth because what do we complain about, Andy? We want a diversified, balanced
TV
schedule.
Right, we want a good schedule all day.
Exactly. Yeah. So
that's why I've never complained about Big Noon, but I'm not a season ticket holder at Ohio State.
I kind of love it.
Because Big Noon also forced ESPN to counter program with decent games at noon. So if you look at because you can look at what the ESPN/ABC noon games are in the SEC for the entire season, they've already set them.
Mm-hmm.
There's some good games.
Yeah, they had
they
to spread
finally
their
put good games at noon,
which I think is to the betterment for it's better for the SEC, it's better for the fans, and it's better for everyone because there was a while there at the outset of the ESPN owns all of the SEC era where you had every relevant SEC game airing between kickoff was either 5 to 7 p.m. and you had and in our business, and I know no one's playing the violin for you and I. But in our business, to keep an eye on 4 or 5 relevant games in the same conference at the same time is very frustrating. To then have nothing at noon was very frustrating as well. So balance is great.
They've mastered the triple header as of last year, though. They figured that out.
And that's the way it should be. Now, I know if you're listening or watching this and you're thinking, hey, man, you've never had to stand. Look, I have. I've been in the stands. I've been in the press box. I've gotten up. I've done the unbearable heat. I've covered at Andy's alma mater an old Jefferson Pilot 11 a.m. or it would have been noon Eastern in the Eastern time zone game in the swamp in September. It sucks. It sucks unequivocally. You should hear my Phantom Island co-host Ryan Nanny talk about all the years of the early kickoffs in Gainesville. It's brutal. But the reason why this has happened, the reason why we're talking about UTEP right now is that this game against San Jose State on October 17th is airing on everyone's favorite streaming service, Mountain West Plus. Okay.
Ooh.
So is this phenomenon going to overtake college football? Let me be emphatic. Hell no. Okay.
No.
Television owns this sport. All right.
This is a byproduct of TV not caring enough about this particular game.
But I want to kind of turn that on its head and talk about it for a little bit. As someone who does care deeply for this level of college football, I think this is great because I don't have the figures in front of me. I'd probably have to file a couple FOIAs to get the exact number. But the dollar amount that UTEP receives for their overall TV deal, their first, their third party rights, the whole deal, is going to be infinitesimal, sir, compared to one of the schools that we just talked about. Any of the schools we just talked about, Michigan or LSU or whatever, okay? The Sun Bowl is massive. It is iconic. It is one of the most beautiful places to watch a game. The city of El Paso is more important, in my opinion, right now to UTEP football developing some success, and they haven't had success in a good while, honestly. Not since Mike Price had an incident in a strip club. Has UTEP right. had consecutive winning seasons where they were relevant?
And that means, okay, what he means is they got Mike Price because of that, because Mike Price would have been Alabama's coach otherwise.
I'm not accusing UTEP necessarily of sending the stripper to the Florabama, but that would have been some 40 chess,
Angels,
my friend.
Please let us not. The Florabama is a fine, upstanding establishment where no one gets naked, at least professionally.
Absolutely not. It's like the Claremont Lounge in Atlanta. Back to UTEP for a second. This is good because I think a lot of group of schools, you know, a person I would like to ask about this is Jeremiah Dickey, the AD at Boise State. I might do this because Boise lives in this liminal space of we want to be playing the biggest games possible. We're going to be a giant killer. We need to have the ESPN games. We need to have this and that. But also, all of these group of schools are still community focused. They still derive a significant amount of revenue from things like season ticket sales, walk-up mm-hmm. ticket sales, community discounts, bringing in groups, and all the kind of stuff that anybody who's ever worked in minor league baseball knows what I'm talking about. UTEP, because they've sucked for a good while now, the Sun Bowl is usually empty. So anything that draws more locals from both Ciudad Juarez and El Paso to come into the Sun Bowl to watch that game is going to be better for the program in the short term than adhering to whatever tiny amount of money they make fitting into. Right. Like, I'm looking at their entire schedule right now, Andy. I'm not going to count. They're going to be on the SEC network because they're Oklahoma's, garbage disposal game. But they don't really have a relevant game television-wise on their – they have three games that are slated for Fox Networks, which are regionals basically, I think, because they would have right. – that's the new Mountain West TV deal. Otherwise, TV isn't relevant for UTEP right now, and I'm not saying it should or shouldn't be, but I think more group of schools should take this initiative to try and find new ways to make to market themselves, to generate revenue. I don't know if you've ever experienced going through that Watch ESPN app to find one of these games.
Oh, yeah, it's brutal.
You are not the priority here, okay? They're not paying you like you're a priority. You shouldn't treat that as your priority. I think this is a good move for schools at this level to generate local interest and money. Hopefully money.
Yeah, because every ticket sold is more money than you had before.
Absolutely. And if in the El Paso community, for instance, Andy, let's say the weather in mid-October is better at 7 o'clock than being stuck in an arbitrary 2 o'clock kickoff time for some streaming rights, I think that's a good thing.
So before we leave this group of six topic, I do want to bring up something Ross wrote earlier this week, because I think we've talked so much about this bill in the Senate, but the thing that sticks with me, and Ross pointed this out, is they're trying to stop conference realignment. And basically what they're trying to stop is the SEC and the Big Ten eating the best parts of the other leagues.
Yeah.
In the process, they've created something that if it passes will not allow basically any conference realignment. And the group of six schools are like, wait, should we move around before this thing passes if this thing's going to pass? Because we might be stuck. Like,
could be a lot of people bumping into each other in the dark.
Ross talked to Bria Cantwell about this. She's the senator from Washington. A lot of, her motivation behind this is what happened to Washington State.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. You see her quoted in this and you kind of. I wasn't there when Ross was talking to her, but I'm just imagining her face as it dawns on her, like, wait, we just screwed Washington State too. Crap.
Yeah. If Maria Cantwell's intent was because Washington State was put on an island, the actions of the current legislation as it is written basically builds a prison wall around that island.
Yeah.
Wazoo. Yeah, exactly. Like, Wazoo is just that much more screwed. And I get it. I've said it on the show before. I think Wazoo is, I don't want to be blasphemous, but it is sort of the spotless victim of everything that's happened in college football the last 10 years. There's no school that ends up on a shorter end of a shorter stick than the Cougars. But you also have to preserve the, like, hope, right? As dumb as it sounds, Some of us take our chisel and we go all the way through the sewer and we end up as MAC member Sacramento State.
Like, spoilers for a 30-year-old movie.
I'm going to guarantee you something. If you're watching this show or listening to it, you have at one point in your life, whether you are 22 or 82, fallen asleep to Shawshank Redemption on TNT. right? I guarantee it.
So it is fascinating to see now, because they, the thing they were trying to do, and you had, like, you had to pick a side if you're Ted Cruz and Maria Cantwell, and they clearly picked a side, and the side was, we're going to pick the side of the non-SEC in the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. And now,
Cody Campbell,
in the process of trying to appease everybody, mm-hmm. which you'll never appease everybody.
You cannot.
They've now made it where they haven't picked anybody's side. They've effectively screwed everyone. And yes. So, going to be wild to see what happens if this thing actually passed. Again, I don't think it will. Ross keeps pointing out, how can you pass something to regulate an industry where the two largest stakeholders in the industry don't want it? And now I would argue that basically 100% of the industry won't want it.
No. Yeah. There's no way Yeah. Could you imagine? What do you think they feel like at Memphis right now?
Oh, I know. Like Miami?
Yeah.
Clemson and Florida State, who literally filed a lawsuit against their conference.
That's my G6 brain. But yeah, Miami, Clemson, and Florida State would be the most effective in the shortest term. Texas Tech, ironically, would be as well. I mean, just has Cody thought this through?
Yeah. I don't think it's in his hands anymore either.
Folks, Ronald Reagan was right. You don't want the government showing up. All right. We all told you on the show, figure it out, get a CBA, just go to the table, regulate yourself, because this is what happens when they show up in their matching ponchos from the government. It's always worse. All right?
Yeah. Yep. And they've mucked it up royally this time. So
yes, sir.
We will probably talk more as the legislative session winds down, as we get toward the off-year election. Well, they're off-year, off-presidential year, but the midterm elections. Which will reshape the membership of Congress. We'll get to that. But listen, Godfrey, it would not be the summer of 2026 if we didn't talk about Brennan Sorsby at least once on the show. So we will do that when we return. We are back at the College Football Inquirer, and we have not mentioned Brennan Sorsby's name on the show this week, so we're going to have to, because after Tuesday's show was put in the can, the NFL essentially dropped a nuke on Brennan Sorsby. Basically, like, we're not having a supplemental draft. We don't have to have a supplemental draft. It's our choice to have a supplemental draft, and we don't want to have one. And the NFL's lawyer didn't have to say all he said in the letter. He could have just been like, we're not having one because we don't want to have one.
Yeah.
But he expounded on the point and basically said, we know why you're doing this and we're not amused. We'll see you in April.
I'm going to try to get through a Sorsby segment and not make any of the points I've made previously, reiterate any of my opinions. I'm going to try and spin this forward. And the best way to spin this forward, I can't talk, is to figure out what... Regardless of your opinion, I know he created. I know he committed the fatal sin of gambling. All right, never mind the sheer
gambling on his own team.
The sheer volume of like cover-ups, and we just let pass.
But
in
also
football.
There are laws and law enforcement agencies and people.
All right, well, so other than the fact that I don't think this guy should be absolutely destroyed. All right,
but is he destroyed if he doesn't play NFL football until 2027?
Well, so let's figure out what my guy's going to do for a little while. All right. There are several options here. Andy didn't even know I was going to do this. Andy, let's talk about the non-college, non-NFL world of football for a second. All right.
Oh, arena ball.
So
I was a big Orlando Predators fan growing up. Huge.
Neil Brown, head coach at North Texas, famously tells me a story about he knew his entire life was flash. Or he was like, I knew I had to make a change in my life when I got pinned against the boards, catching a pass. God. And he's like, oh, I think that was my spleen. I should think about coaching. Anyway, that's not the best endorsement for arena football, but I always love that.
I'm making $15,000 for this season, and I'm going to die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For 1,200 disinterested fans in an arena somewhere in middle America. You have the Canadian Football League. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Canadian Football League, of all the things I'm going to discuss, probably the most constant and steady. They have fans. They have television coverage. All right.
You can motion toward the line of scrimmage.
You can do all kinds of fun stuff. Yeah, it would feel very Texas Tech inspired, sort of, I guess. If you know, it's sort of spread.
Never played for Texas Tech.
But I'm looking at all these pictures online, and you know, this is why you should not do that AI Photoshop thing, kids, because this guy's going to be associated with Texas Tech until he's dead, whether you like it or not. UFL, United Football mm-hmm. League, and for those of you who tuned out of football after February, one, you're smart. But two, the UFL is the marriage of the XFL's second mm-hmm. iteration under Dwayne The Rock Johnson as one of the partners. And then another minor league, the UFL, they merged and became the UFL as a whole. Most of the XFL influence is gone now. It is just sort of a minor league. Do you know who won the UFL this year, Andy?
Was it the Houston Gamblers?
It was the Louisville team whose mascot I don't know.
How? So you got to be ready for that.
I know. I kind of thought you just know. You just usually just know stuff. All right. He could go to
the Kings. They're the Kings.
Of course. Yeah. Generic name insert here. He could play JUCO.
He could play JUCO. That is true. That is what Hunter Deckers did. He was an Iowa Western Reaver.
Mm-hmm. He could go to the international ranks. There are several. I don't want to spoil something I've been working on in my day job, but there is a emerging league in Mexico that has $100 million of promised American investment over the next couple of years. They're expanding teams right now. Do you remember Jeremy Johnson from Auburn?
Absolutely.
He is like it's the LFA, Ligue de Football Americana. All right.
Mm-hmm.
His team just won the LFA season.
He's the El Jefe of the LFA.
He is the all-time, I believe he holds basically every all-time pass stat now in the LFA. He just led Chihuahua to a LFA title.
Are they the Chihuahua Chihuahuas? Please tell me they're the Chihuahua Chihuahuas.
There's a little Chihuahua
on the helmet.
They're the Chihuahua Cardillos, which I just, my pronunciation is probably hurting somebody here. And they just beat the Monterrey Osos, okay, in their Super Bowl, all right? So, the LFA, you could go down there and you would be a god down there for a season. They'd probably offer you a bunch of money. You could play out the season. The schedule is going to be basically the same as the UFL. You could do that. You could go to the European leagues, Andy. You could play for, I think there's still a league in Italy where half the guys are smoking cigarettes in between plays. All right.
The problem with the UFL solution, which obviously is the most competitive one, is it is a spring season. That is when you'd be doing your draft prep.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's
all of these are spring seasons that I'm mentioning, by the way, with the exception of if he were to jump into the CFL now, he would be okay. I think probably he ends up just sitting out.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to go one of these routes.
Now, if Texas Tech wants to, and I don't know if they even want to deal with this at this point, but if they want to make good on what they said during the entire saga, they find a role for him with the football team, not as a player, that allows him to work out with the team, that allows him to stay sharp, stay healthy, that allows them to support him in his journey, trying to overcome the gambling addiction that he talked about in his court filings. What do we think is going to happen there? Do we think that's going to happen? I don't think that's going to happen.
This is what you and I talked about. When I came back from vacation, I had kind of missed the front end of the Sorsby hysteria. And I had been very vocal about we should not throw this human being out into the wilds and all this kind of stuff. And that was misconstrued as, oh, well, Godfrey's fine if you gamble on your team. No, what I said was, under a logical CBA for college football players, you would have an agreed upon suspension process, mm-hmm. very similar to Calvin Ridley, who did the same thing in the NFL.
Yeah, who missed the year.
Yeah, so remember, I had pitched two different suspension scenarios. The second one was you're frozen for a year. You can come back and play for Texas Tech in 2027. This is maybe I'd toss this back to you.
Probably doesn't work with our first segment where we're like, no more waivers.
Yeah. That's right. Well, this is why you need the CBA to clear all this up instead of two sports writers. But what if, and this isn't going to happen because it really is going to involve tamping down the gambling hysteria. This kid never fixed a game. He bet on games. It's totally different, in my opinion. I'm not saying it's not bad. I'm saying that this guy should not be. Again, I'm going to say this one more time. He shouldn't be in. If he had fixed the game, he'd be looking at federal charges right now. Okay, he didn't fix the game.
Correct.
What if he does just sit out a year, Andy? What if he does just work out of the facility in Lubbock? And then what if he has a chance to play in 2027 for Texas Tech? Would the world end? Are we going to have to deal with all this crap next year?
No, because I think that would be a significant penalty. I think people would be fine with him serving a significant penalty.
Can we also talk about something for a second here? Is Brendan Sorsby going to have a 10-year career as a starting NFL quarterback?
Well, if you listen to certain NFL network personalities before the denial of the supplemental draft, they said he would.
Now, really?
Well, here's the thing.
Okay.
If he really was, okay, you've heard people on the NFL network say, oh, if Brendan Sorsby had come out after the last year at Cincinnati, he could have been a first round draft pick. If that were true,
he would have.
Guess what? They would be having a supplemental draft.
Yeah, true.
Because now, teams would have been like, no, we want him, Raj.
Yeah. It was a abnormally weak field for quarterbacks. We did that show twice.
Yeah.
Yep. Right? But it really was Dante Moore, and it was the Jets not having right. Dante Moore.
And if he was that good, he would have thrown his hat into the ring for the 2026 draft.
Yeah.
Because it was a weak draft.
No, I think it was his camp.
Yeah.
Value or did sort of a value prop of what are my chances in the NFL financially right now in 2026, even in the weak field where you're basically getting compared to Ty Simpson at this point.
Right. Whereas in the portal,
cash in hand in Lubbock, baby. That's mm-hmm. that's and the short term gain was always going to be Lubbock.
Yes. Yes. There were more quarterback needy college teams that would pay significantly than there were NFL teams that were willing to reach, basically. And, oh, by the way, another potential rule change. This hasn't happened yet. This is a proposed rule change that we forgot to mention. The transfer portal. They would like to shrink that by 5 days in January.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We needed to mention that.
But it's interesting because I think that actually fits into the Sorsby discussion here. Sorsby okay. was one of a few quarterbacks. Sam Levitt was one of the other ones.
Yes.
That were willing to move and that everybody's throwing money at.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that there weren't enough of those meant that certain schools that needed a quarterback, cough, cough, Miami, cough, cough, had to shake somebody loose. And so this is what people have been asking me since this proposal has come out. Does that mean the Darian Mensah thing doesn't happen? Does that mean he stays at Duke? No, it just means he leaves Duke 5 days earlier.
Yeah, you compress the timeline. It's bad. Yeah. We joked. It's kind of bad for aspects of our industry, more kind of closer to yours at On3, where you want this window to exist. That's a good thing.
I need five more days, not five fewer days. That's five easy shows, baby.
Here's what I need as the co-host of a year-round college football podcast that at minimum is twice a week. Shout out to our lovely executives. I need that window to not be in January. We have other things to discuss in January.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, if anyone is listening, can you drop this and like, I know why it's not gonna. I understand why, but can I get it in June? Can I get it in May?
We can move you. Well, you actually probably should. I don't know if it's too late to get on the ballot somewhere, but you could be in Congress because they don't understand this either.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. Yeah, yeah. They don't get the semester system either. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So. They said, oh, we just have the portal in April. No problem.
I'm kind of that mentality, though, because all I think about is the media calendar of the NFL being so immaculate and wanting that because I cover college and not thinking about like, oh, well, I guess we are really just here to play football. Like, you know,
some of these guys go to class, Godfrey.
Allegedly. Cardale didn't.
He didn't come to play school. Josh Dobbs did.
He came to dominate kids at NCAA even when they were in a children's hospital. And to that,
that's right. Yeah, Josh Dobbs came to play school.
He sure did.
So I have Butch Jones on my On3 show on Thursday.
Tell him I said hi.
He tells the story of going to recruit Josh Dobbs.
Yeah.
And Josh Dobbs' mom. Okay, if you don't know Josh Dobbs is in the NFL still. Mm-hmm. But he got an aeronautical engineering degree at Tennessee. He is literally a rocket scientist. He will work for NASA when he mm-hmm. finishes playing football.
When he wants to, yeah.
And Josh Dobbs' mom had a copy of the NCAA manual, the 400-something page NCAA manual, and took Butch Jones through it line by line for like 6 hours on the in-home visit. Josh Dobbs is going to class, baby.
What's the Myron Roll, right? Myron Roll, Florida State.
Rhodes Scholar, yep.
Yes, is now a pediatric neurosurgeon. I'm checking his CV right now.
That's exactly right.
All right, it does happen. See, man, we've been way too nice to the NCAA today because we're reinforcing all this stupid nonsense. Yeah, yeah. So,
but yeah, they do occasionally go to class, which is why the portal's in January still. That and coaches, I got to have my team by January.
Yeah, but Andy, this doesn't fix that playoff problem. I know maybe this isn't the point of the segment, and shrinking it doesn't really fix that problem. Hang on. I had a thought.
Okay.
The portal window now. Mm-hmm. That is being proposed. The days are, help me out here, I got to check my notes, the shrinking of the window. You are looking at...
Within like January 11th, right?
Starting January 1st of 2027, the NCAA committee has, it's a 10-day proposal starting January 1st, and that would be down from the 15 days. So this isn't perfect, but here's where I'm going.
Okay.
Could we back it up 10 days?
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do all the other things that you and I have talked about when Ross is gone. Remember at the week that you and I killed conference championships? Remember that?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So let's pull everybody
together.
Let's
be real. The conferences themselves have done a better job than us at that.
This is very true. Let's pull the playoff. Let's end the regular season with sort of English soccer style. All right. You had the most wins in your conference, blah, 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 blah. We're going to go into the playoff on the first week of December.
Yeah.
And then those are the play-ins of hopefully just a 16-team playoff, but God only knows. We'll see what Fox does. Then the second week, which is now Heisman and Army-Navy, is the week that like the bulk of the playoff joins. Mm-hmm. And then we could be done later than the – like let's – January 1st feels Pollyanna. So let's say maybe that following week.
January 8th. Or yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Then you immediately turn around and start the portal scramble. Is that – does that work?
It works for most schools, but not all. But yeah, they could figure out how to make it work.
But that's better for everybody. It's better for us because everybody
is going to be tampering anyway, so they'll know who they're going to take.
Yeah.
And you'll be able to get them enrolled.
And by the way, for those of you not in the sports media business, believe it or not, the national title is not when we peak in terms of attention or work because there's only two teams playing. The times that our industry peaks is August. Because everybody's undefeated and hope springs eternal. Everybody's got their Phil Steele. They're figuring out how they're going to win 9. Okay. And then any recruiting window, like we're talking about with personnel, is when everybody gets involved. Right. So if you are a Wisconsin or South Carolina fan who hasn't had anything to really care about for a couple weeks, when this window opens, you care again. So if you push that just after the football playing window, I think it would be better for everybody involved on the consumer side and the media side and the industry side. We would just have to figure out how to make that work on the academic side.
Yeah, and the thing is that the teams are probably okay with that too, because they're starting to figure out that they're in the entertainment business as well. And
I wonder what clued them off. Was it the giant billions of dollars of television revenue or the cathedral-like stadiums
in Pyro? It's when the big game started at noon. And they were forced to start them then.
I mean, dude, I've said this on the show a couple times. Like, I took my two sons to the Georgia-Texas game just as fans. And I was standing there and I'm like, this is a better entertainment production value than pretty much any other experience you could have live in America. It is an entertainment experience. Like Athens has, comparing that to a Georgia game I went to 15 years ago, there is no compare. Like, we are in the entertainment business so unabashedly now that we have to start really recognizing and admitting.
Well, and I think look at the World Cup games.
Yeah.
And the production value of those and the stadium amenities and everything that's available to them.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously they used a couple of college stadiums for friendlies beforehand. They're using pro stadiums now, but college has adopted all the stuff the pro stadiums do too.
Mm-hmm.
Plus adding the marching bands and the actual flavor. Yeah. Like, yeah, they're pretty good at it now. Like they're pretty good at the spectacle part. So,
dude, when they had the montage going with the lights on our arms in Sanford Stadium and the Who starts playing and then there's the old school Athens montage, dude, I was ready to run through the tunnel. Let's go. Yes, it is an entertainment spectacle at its best.
So it's going to be gonna be fun. That is probably as nice as we'll ever be to the NCAA for an hour.
For sure.
I'm glad we've got it out of our systems. When mm-hmm. Ross comes back, we'll resume bashing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the point of the show.
Yeah. I think that's it's yeah. fair, right?
Yeah. Ross does all the homework, and we sit in the back of the class and make fun of everybody.
He might be too busy to even listen to this one. So he may yeah. never even know this happened.
Oh, he's not. He's not. No, there's no way. You can say anything right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So people are going to call and be like, wow, you guys were nice to us.
Yeah. Louisiana's like, not America. Ross won't hear this. Louisiana's not America. Yeah. That's not a real place. Trust me.
So we're back to our usual curmudgeonly selves on Tuesday. We'll talk to you then.
Oh, deal. For sure.